This is a reading of the collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Approaching the Mystery of Golgotha. This is the last lecture in this collection. It's entitled Lecture 10. It's entitled The Four Sacrifices of Christ, the Three Precursors of the Mystery of Golgotha, given in Basel, June 1st, 1914. For our present-day culture, it is necessary, above all things, that we come more and more to a new knowledge of Christ by letting the results of spiritual science work on us. And much that bears the official seal of Christianity is hostile toward this new knowledge of Christ. It is necessary that we understand more and more that we need a school of selflessness for our culture. A renewal of morality, a deepening of human moral life, can only come through schooling in selflessness. In accordance with the conditions of the present cycle of time, we can work through this school of selflessness only if we gain a penetrating understanding for real selflessness. If we look at the evolution of the world, we can find no deeper understanding for selflessness than what was given us through the appearance of Christ on earth. And to know Christ means to undergo the school of selflessness. To know Christ means making oneself familiar with all the impulses of human development that trickle into our soul in such a way that they glow through, warm through, and call up to active soul existence everything in the soul that is inclined to selflessness. Under the influence of materialism, the selflessness of humanity was lost in a way as will be understood in future ages of humanity. However, through absorption in the mystery of Golgotha, the penetration of the knowledge of the mystery of Golgotha with our whole feeling and soul being, we can once again acquire a culture of selflessness. We can come to understand that what Christ did for the development of the earth is contained in the fundamental impulse of selflessness, and that what he can become for the conscious development of the human soul is the school of selflessness. We become aware of this best if we consider the mystery of Golgotha in its broader context. This mystery of Golgotha took place, as we know, once within the physical development of the earth. The being we recognize as the Christ being was incarnated once in a physical body, in the body of Jesus of Nazareth. However, this mystery of Golgotha had three preliminary stages. Three times previously, something occurred in the spiritual world. So, to a certain extent, we have three mysteries of Golgotha, which did not yet take place on the physical plane. The fourth was the first to take place on the physical plane, and that is the one about which the Gospels and the letters of Paul tell us. This greatest event to happen on earth was prepared by three spiritual events, with one event lying in the ancient Lemurian age and two in the ancient Atlantean age. The fourth event lies in the post-Atlantean period and is our mystery of Golgotha. Although the three preceding events did not transpire on earth, but in the super-earthly world, the power of these events made its way down to the earth. We want to try to understand how the forces of the three preparatory events influenced the development of humanity. In reference to our moral life, to our understanding of the world, and to what transpires in our consciousness soul, we must first become selfless. That is a task of our present culture for the future. Humanity must always become more and more selfless. Therein lies the future of right moral life deeds, the future of all acts of love that can occur through earthly humanity. Our conscious life is on the way to selflessness, or must be on the way to selflessness. In a certain condition, however, there is in us already something essentially selfless, and it would be the greatest misfortune of human beings on earth if they became as selfish in regard to certain parts of their being as must be the case in many respects today in connection with their moral, intellectual, and feeling life. If selfishness, for example, could seize our senses to the same degree it seizes our morals, this would be the greatest misfortune of human beings on earth. For our senses work on our body in such a way that selflessness expresses itself in this effect of the senses. We have eyes in our body. We see through these eyes. However, we see only because the eyes are selfless. because we don't notice them at all. We carry them in us. We see things, so to speak, straight through the eyes, but the eyes themselves are extinguished as such in our perception. It is the same with the other senses. We perceive the world because our sense system is selfless. Let us assume that our eyes were selfish. What would then happen with human beings? If, for example, we approached a blue color and the eye functioned in such a way that it would not let the color through, but would hold the color within itself and drain it of all of its essence, then the blue would suck on the eye. If the eye could become so selfish as we are in our moral life, in the intellectual and feeling life, we would feel it like a sucking force in the eye, Iwai. If we came near a red color and our eye did not behave in a selfless way, but rather demanded to experience the red within itself, the red would have an effect like piercing on our eye. And if our eye were selfish, we would experience a pain of sucking or piercing with all impressions. We would be well aware that we had eyes, but we would only perceive sucking or piercing pains. In reality, human beings of today go through the world and know that color and light effects are there, however. They do not need to think about the eye. It snuffs itself out selflessly during perception, and it is the same with the other senses. Selflessness rules in our senses. However, the senses might not have arrived at this selflessness. Their selflessness would have been taken from them in the Lemurian age if Lucifer had been able to act as a free agent in that time. The spirit spoken of by the biblical phrase, quote, "your eye will be opened," unquote, has caused human beings to be displaced to a sphere of earthly life, in which their eyes, if they had developed under the influence of Lucifer, would have become selfish. And with each impression, and it would have been the same for the other senses, people would not have perceived the red color, but would have shouted, "Ah, something is sticking me here," unquote. And they would not have seen the blue color, but would have said, quote, "Something is sucking on me," unquote. In the Lemurian period, this danger was warded off from the development of humanity. In the super-earthly worlds, the being who later incarnated in the body of Jesus of Nazareth through the mystery of Golgotha ensouled himself, I cannot say incarnated, in an archangelic being. So while the earth was going through the Lemurian age, a being lived in the spiritual heights, who, one would wish to say through a kind of heralding of the baptism by John, was created through Christ penetrating an archangel who sacrificed its soul nature. Thereby, Christ released a force that worked its way into human development on earth and caused a calming and harmonizing of the senses. Because today we can use our senses in such a way that they are selfless, we will gaze, if we have understood the facts concerning this and are thankful to the world order, into primeval times and recognize that what we are as sense beings makes it possible that instead of feeling pain through our senses, we perceive the magnificence of nature around us. This comes from the first Christ sacrifice. Through ensouling himself in an archangel, he produced the effect that diverted the danger of selfishness of the senses from the development of humanity. That was the first preliminary stage of the mystery of Golgotha. When human beings gaze at the magnificence of nature, at the starry heavens, at everything the sun shines on, at what is all around them in the animal, mineral, and vegetable kingdoms, they will gradually learn to develop a deep, significant religious feeling, and to be thankful for the first sacrifice of Christ in preparation for the mystery of Golgotha. This sacrifice allows the senses to function without pain and to be the instrument for perceiving the magnificence of the world. And we can foresee a time when the observation and enjoyment of nature will be imbued with Christ. We will go out and refresh ourselves with the magnificent beauty of springtime or summer, or with the other wonders of nature, and will realize that as we perceive all this splendor of nature, we must be aware that it is not us, but the Christ in our senses who makes this possible. In the first times of the Atlantean development, the selfishness wanted to seize hold of the life organs of the human organization through the influence of Lucifer and Ahriman. Let us try to look at what is essential in our life organization, what is that essential element? We need only to think what happens to us when this element in the life organs is impaired. And it is impaired when physical illnesses of the life organs appear. Then we begin to experience the selfishness of our lungs, our heart, stomach, and other organs. The minute we first feel the pain, we know that we have a stomach, a heart. We have immediate consciousness of the fact that being sick means an organ has become selfish. It lives its own individual life in our organism. That is not the case in normal human life. Then the individual organ lives selflessly in the overall human organization, and our everyday constitution only keeps us on our feet in the world with certainty when we can go through the world with selfless organs, when we do not sense that we have a stomach, lungs, and so forth, when we have them without noticing them, when they don't start asserting themselves, when they are serving members in the whole organism. On another occasion, we will speak about why illness is brought about through the selfishness of the organs. Today, there will only be mention of the normal condition. If it were up to Lucifer and Ahriman, entirely other conditions would already have appeared in the Atlantean development. Each individual human organ would have become egotistical, and something quite peculiar would have happened. Let us assume that we approach some kind of fruit or something in the outside world that we can enjoy, or that stands in some kind of relationship to our bodily organization. Just this relationship to our life organs will be a subject of medical study when science finally allows itself to be stimulated by spiritual science. Then it will be known, for example, that when a person plucks cherries from the tree and eats them, what passes over into the organization has a special relationship to certain organs. Other fruits and foods have other relationships to other organs. Everything that comes into the human organization has specific relationships to this organization. If what was about to happen in the Atlantean period, through Lucifer and Ahriman, had been fulfilled, then, when we picked the cherries, the organ that has a connection to the cherries would have felt intense craving of the highest degree. An infinite craving would have come to expression, and we would have sensed the relative organ which had selfishly stepped out of its place in the overall organism. However, because of this disruption, the other organs within the organism would have struggled just as selfishly. Or let us take another case. For example, if something were present which is harmful to us. Exactly as some things in the environment have specific connections with a person in a good sense, other things in the environment have detrimental ones. If we approached any sort of poisonous plant or something else that has only a detrimental relationship to one of our organs, we would have sensed this relationship through the inner activity of the organ. This would be expressed in a dreadful, tormenting feeling of fear. We would feel, here is something that so works on the organ that it makes it feel virtually burned out. Let us now take not what people eat, but the air that surrounds us. Everything that appears in the air has a relationship to our organs. Had what Ahriman and Lucifer wanted come to fruition, and had human beings been left to rely entirely on themselves, they would have been driven through the world between bestial greed for what is beneficial for one or the other organ, and terrible disgust toward what is harmful for one organ or the other. Let us imagine that we were so situated in the world with such physical organs that we would be, to the highest degree, at the mercy of every pleasant aroma, running after it even if we were an hour away, or that a feeling of repulsion from far away would make it necessary for us to run away. If we were thrown back and forth like a rubber ball, how would we develop in the world? That things did not turn out that way, that our life organs were muted and harmonized, is the result of the second preliminary stage of Golgotha, which took place in super-earthly spheres when human beings were going through the first Atlantean period. Again, the Christ being ensouled itself in an archangelic being, and what was brought about through it radiated down into the earth's atmosphere. That was when the harmonizing and the dampening down of the life organs that makes the human organs selfless took place. If this second Christ event had not intervened, our relationship with the environment would have continually caused the worst diseases. We could not be healthy at all. Future humanity will become selfless if it can imbue itself with a real understanding of the spiritual world and acquire a feeling of gratitude for the spiritual beings on which the human being depends. Humanity will fill itself with the true piety through which it will understand that physical human beings with selfless organs do not exist only because they alone have developed themselves in the world, but because the Christ in them formed them in such a way that they can be human. We are learning more and more that we must fundamentally understand everything that makes us human in a global sense, so that we say, quote, not I, but the Christ in me, unquote. Christ has taken care of the entire development of humanity in the three preliminary stages of the mystery of Golgotha, which he accomplished before the actual mystery of Golgotha. In the last period of Atlantean development, humanity stood before a third danger. Thinking, feeling, and willing were about to lapse into disorder. Selfishness was about to move into thinking, feeling, and willing. What would have come about through that? Now, human beings might have wanted this or that, might have followed this or that impulse of the will, while their thinking would have followed another impulse, and their feeling yet another. It was necessary for the development of humanity that thinking, feeling, and willing fit themselves selflessly into the totality of the soul. This would have been impossible under the influence of Lucifer and Ahriman alone. In that case, thinking, feeling, and willing would have been selfish. They would have, in a way, torn apart the harmonious functioning of the soul. However, toward the end of the Atlantean development, the third Christ event intervened. Once again, the Christ being ensouled itself in an archangelic being, and the force that arose in the super-earthly world, as a result, harmonized thinking, feeling, and willing. Truly, just as the physical rays of the sun must do their job on earth so that all plant life does not wither away, so the sun spirit must do its work, reflecting into the earth from the super-earthly worlds, as I have just described. In the third stage, the Christ being harmonized, thinking, feeling, and willing, as they must be harmonized for normal human life. What would have become of human beings if this third Christ event had not occurred? They would have been seized as if by the Furies, by wild appetites, and by the life of their will. They would have been seized by raving, in spite of the fact that their intellect, on the other hand, would have scorned what the will accomplished in its frenzy. This chaos was averted when the Christ being was in the soul of an archangel for the third time. Humanity has received a memento of how human passion and human thinking were harmonized through the forces that acted from the super-earthly worlds. And this memento still exists, but is not understood in the right way. Saint George defeating the dragon, or Michael defeating the dragon, is the sign formed for the third Christ event. Saint George and Michael are the signs for Christ's ensouling of himself in the form of an archangel, and the dragon they destroy is the being who would have brought human thinking, feeling, and willing into disorder. All those who contemplate Saint George with the dragon, or Michael with the dragon, or something similar, are in fact contemplating the third Christ event. And the Greeks, who created in their wonderful mythology something like facsimiles of what transpired at the end of the Atlantean age in the spiritual world, revered the sun spirit as the harmonizer of thinking, feeling, and willing in the human being. They understood that the sun spirit had been ensouled in an etheric spirit form, the form of the beings we call archangels today. They understood that he created harmony on his wonderful lyre, making the human soul sound forth in harmony what otherwise would have been chaotic, wild, and ungoverned in the human soul as thinking, feeling, and willing. In Greece, the sun spirit became the guardian spirit of the human passions, which would have stormed fiercely if they had come to life in the wild steam clouds rising out of the bowels of the earth. If human beings had allowed only these steam clouds to act upon them, then thinking, feeling, and willing would have raged in a confused manner within them. So the Greek placed the Pythia over the steam clouds that rose out of the earth, and, through Lucifer and Ahriman, would bring the passions into disorder. But Apollo spread his light over Pythia, and defeated the wildness of the passions, and she became a prophetess. The Greek felt the sun spirit Apollo to be the Christ of the third Christ event. In Apollo's protection, in relationship to the passion-ruling temperament of the Pythia, the Greeks saw the effect of the third sacrifice of Christ, in which the human passions that were lapsing into disorder were harmonized. For the Greeks, the sun spirit Apollo is basically the same as what is represented in the pictures of Michael or St. George, who conquer the dragon. So we see that when Justin the Martyr makes a peculiar utterance, it makes sense, an utterance which, though the martyr made it, may be regarded as Christian, although various contemporary representatives of Christianity would denounce him as a heretic. Justin said, quote, "Heraclitus, Socrates, and Plato were also Christian, however only such as one could be before the mystery of Golgotha," unquote. The theologians of today know nothing more than this anymore, but the Christian martyrs of the first period of Christianity still knew that the ancient Greek wise men, even if they did not perhaps use the name of Christ, would have known from their knowledge of the mysteries that Apollo was the great sun spirit who would later live in a human being. If asked who Apollo was, they would have said that the sun spirit was ensouled in Apollo as in an archangelic form. And then came the fourth, the earthly mystery, that of Golgotha. The same Christ being that had ensouled itself three times in the form of an archangel, incarnated in the body of Jesus of Nazareth through the baptism by John in the Jordan. I concede that it will appear unusual to you that I say that this being has ensouled itself three times in the form of an archangel, and then incarnated in a human form. For it would be more systematic to say that between the ensoulement in the form of an archangel and the incarnation in a physical body was an ensoulment in the form of an angel, meaning that Christ would have ensouled himself in an angelic form at one of the stages. That is how it would seem. However, when one hears people impute that the things coming from spiritual science are made up, truly it is not so. You can deduce this from other things. And if you ask me today, how is it that the Christ did not descend from hierarchy to hierarchy, and then finally to the human, I must answer that I don't know, because I am definitely not drawing any conclusions. The fact is that Christ made use of an archangel form three times, and then a human form. The angel form was omitted. I leave it to later research to determine why it is so. Today I do not yet know why, but it is true. If one wanted to invent, one would make it totally different. That you can infer from what has just been said. And so the fourth stage of the mystery of Golgotha took place. This mystery of Golgotha averted the danger that the I, capital I, would lapse into disorder through the influence of Lucifer and Ahriman. In ancient Lemuria, the sense organs would have lapsed into disorder through Lucifer. In the first Atlantean period, disorder and disharmony threatened the life organs. In the last Atlantean period, the organs of the soul, gemüt, which underpin thinking, feeling, and willing. And in the post-Atlantean age, disorder threatened the I itself. Because the I was to make strides in human development at this time, one sought to produce harmony between this I and the forces of the cosmos, so that the I would not be the mere plaything of these forces. This could have happened. The I would have taken such a form that it would have been impossible to keep hold of oneself, and if given over to these forces, whatever would come from the soul would have been swept along in all directions with all the elemental forces that come from wind, air, and waves. Michelangelo painted it. Take a look at Michelangelo's pictures, and you will see that he painted the Sibyls as that which threatened the human being. He depicted so wonderfully how they represent the type of person who feels the I lapsing into disorder, so that when this I comes into disorder, all the wonderful wisdom possible can come forth, but in such a way that the human being cannot direct it. They represent the different stages of what is given over to elemental beings through disorder of the I. On the other hand, however, something else emerges. In the same space he painted the meditating forms of the prophets, on whom we can see that they bring to light that which maintains the order of the I over against the cosmos. It can move us deeply when we see the drive toward the I and the prophets, and on the other side the human beings who have come into disorder through the I itself, and then see Christ himself in this space, who incarnated in a human body, and whose task is to bring the I, which is about to come into the world, into order. Yes, spiritual science will show us ever more profoundly how this human I can arrive at selflessness through the fourth Christ event, the mystery of Golgotha. The senses have said, quote, not I, but the Christ in me, not I, the Christ in us, unquote. The life organs have said, quote, not I, the Christ in us, unquote. The organs of the mind have said, quote, not I, the Christ in us, unquote. The moral and intellectual life of human beings must learn to say, quote, not I, the Christ in me, unquote. Every step into the spiritual world shows us this. I wanted to deal with this today so that we can, on another occasion, which we will hopefully have very soon, give individual esoteric proofs for these facts and show how what we call spiritual science will pour into our moral and intellectual life in such a way that human beings will become pupils of selflessness, that the Christ will live in us, and that we will feel the living Christ in every word spoken about spiritual science. There is only one more thing to add. You know that we have performed our mystery dramas in Munich since 1909. One may find what is presented on the mystery stage good or bad, but that is not the issue now. What has been done needed a certain power, a power that does not just come to a person because he or she is a human being on the earth. You see, if we want to be able to work here in Dornach, if we want to be able to work with and process our various kinds of hardwood, we need physical strength. We cannot say that we can deliberately give ourselves this physical strength. It comes from our body and from what we can do in our soul. It is out of our hands. Moreover, all that we carry out in the spiritual sphere, for which we need spiritual power, is out of our hands. That doesn't depend on our human talents alone, just as whether we can do something on earth does not depend on our talents alone, but also on the physical strength of our body. So we need spiritual powers, which are just as much outside us as the physical strength is outside of our soul. I know that shallow people can come along and say, quote, you are a fool, because you believe that spiritual forces come to you from outside, whereas they only rise up from within oneself, unquote. Let them consider me a fool. I find they have the kind of cleverness that cannot tell hunger from a piece of bread. I know how spiritual powers flow into a person from without. Just as we could only believe that hunger itself creates the bread that satisfies it if we were crazy, so little does the power of our soul create the powers we need for spiritual activity. They must flow into us. They must flow to us. And just as we know perfectly well, if we are not crazy, that hunger is in us and that the bread comes from without, just so do those who live in the spiritual world know what is inside them and what comes from without, outside. As for myself, increasingly since 1909, when it came to developing quietly and slowly what was necessary for the mystery dramas, I felt the spiritual power that came from outside. I knew the spiritual I, EYE, of a spiritual being was resting on what was done, and I say this out of direct experience. In the early days of our work in spiritual science, a person came to us as a friend and took up with a wonderful enthusiasm what we had to offer back then. But it was not only with a wonderful, devoted enthusiasm that she took up what we were able to offer about the development of humanity, cosmic secrets, and about reincarnation and karma. Rather, she united it at the same time with a wonderful aesthetic sense. Everything experienced in teaching or in conversing with this personality was immersed in beauty. There were still only a few of us back then. We had no need yet to squeeze ourselves into the space, as is the case today. And the things we speak about before a great audience today were back then discussed by only three, myself and two others. One of these people died already in 1904. It is so that such persons go through a development after death. In the year 1907, as we performed Churet's reconstruction of the mystery of Eleusis at our Congress, there was not yet any perceptible sign of an influence from this soul. It began in 1909, and has been coming more and more since then. I know precisely that it is the individuality of our friend, purely because of the kind of individual traits one could cherish truly and objectively. In the spiritual world, she acted as a guardian angel for what we had to achieve in the uniting of the aesthetic and the esoteric in our mystery dramas. We felt what passed over from her into our earthly activity, and what flowed into effectiveness on the earth and penetrated us, to be well protected by this personality who died in 1904. We took up with gratitude, for what was accomplished came about because the soul EYE of a spiritual personality rested upon our deeds. However, then, when it became a matter of cultivating what one can call dialogue, because it is a kind of activity of exchange, it was always over and over again a situation in which this personality revealed that she could find her way to our activity on earth all the better, the more we imbued ourselves with the thought of Christ in the evolution of the earth. If I were to put into earthly words what this individuality was constantly saying, I would say, parenthesis, I must express this only symbolically, for it is very different in the spiritual world, parenthesis, quote, I find my way to you so well, because you are finding the way more and more to make your spiritual science an expression of the living word of Christ. End quote. The Christ impulse will become for us the living bridge between the life of the earth and the life in super-earthly worlds. Three times Christ laid into human beings, from out of the spiritual world, that nature which they needed to live properly, making their sense, life, and soul, gemüt, organs, selfless. Now it is up to human beings themselves to become selfless in the intellectual and moral aspects of learning to understand, for this intellectual and moral life, the saying, quote, not I, but Christ in me, unquote. The world will recognize that what we proclaim as spiritual science is the word of Christ. He has said, quote, I am with you always until the end of the earth, unquote. The mission of spiritual science in our time is to open the gates to the living Christ. United with the understanding of the living are the dead, who know that Christ has found the passage from heaven to earthly activity. And when the dead incline themselves as the closest protecting gods toward those who live on earth, they find them all the more intensively, the more these souls are themselves imbued and inspired by the Christ impulse. The Christ descended as the lofty Sun Spirit from the super-earthly world through the mystery of Golgotha to find a dwelling in human souls. Spiritual science should become the glad tidings of how the Christ can find a dwelling in the souls of human beings. When the Christ finds a dwelling in the souls of earthly human beings, then the Christ force will shine back once again from the earth's aura into the world's Christ left for the salvation of people on earth, and the entire cosmos will be permeated with Christ. We bring ourselves gradually such a deep understanding of the mystery of Golgotha by penetrating it with spiritual science. If we reflect on it in that way and think, in addition, about how it must be a school of selflessness for the intellectual and moral life of humanity on into the future, then will we be intensely permeated with the need for the spiritual scientific proclamation of the mystery of Golgotha. Then will we know what is meant by the spiritual scientific impulses that desire to enter into the present. Then will the Christ impulse penetrate humanity. In truth, all people can accept him, because Christ did not appear in one nation, but is rather the lofty Sun Being who belongs to the entire earth and can penetrate all human souls, regardless of their nationality or religion. May there eventually be a good many people who find the way to such an understanding of the Christ impulse and to such an understanding of the mystery of Golgotha. Then perhaps will that be considered to be Christian, which today is called unchristian and heretical by many who fancy themselves to be Christian. If we attempt to attain not merely an intellectual understanding of the mystery of Golgotha, but rather to take hold of this mystery of Golgotha with our entire soul, then we need spiritual science to do it. Then, however, we will realize ourselves as members of our spiritual stream, as those souls who understand what is necessary for humanity now and in the immediate future. These are the things about which I wished to speak to you today. Hopefully there will be an opportunity to come back to this city sometime relatively soon to lecture further on the theme we have been discussing here. the end of Lecture 10 and the end of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Approaching the Mystery of Golgotha, given in various cities from 1913 to 1914. It is the 152nd volume in the collected works of Rudolf Steiner.